Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you, from daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between. Because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. Severance is back for season two on Apple TV+.
Before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season one and putting out daily recaps. And after that, we're going to keep going as we recap every episode of season two.
The Severance podcast with Ben Stiller and Adam Scott is presented by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Listen and follow now on Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The search for truth never ends. Introducing June's Journey, a hidden object mobile game with a captivating story. Connect with friends, explore the roaring 20s, and enjoy thrilling activities and challenges while supporting environmental causes. After 7 years, the adventure continues with our immersive travels feature. Explore distant cultures and engage in exciting experiences. There's always something new to discover. Are you ready? Download June's Journey now on Android or iOS.
Welcome to Face Connecticut, an in-depth look at today's issues.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome to Face Connecticut. I'm Morgan Cunningham on WTIC News Talk 1080, Light 100.5 WRCH, and 96.5 TIC. This morning, our guest is Democratic State Representative Eleni Kavros-DeGraw of Avon. She's going to be joining me this morning to talk about the homeless issue in Connecticut and a number of the ideas that are being floated around now at the state capitol to deal with the issue. Good morning, Representative. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me, Morgan. I truly appreciate it.
You know, the last time we talked on Face Connecticut, we were talking about bears in Connecticut. Now we're talking about homelessness, both of which are serious but totally different issues. And it's a good thing to have you back on the show and get your insight. Just give me an idea on homelessness at this point in time in Connecticut. It's definitely a hot topic in this year's legislative session. We're only about a few weeks in, and it's been talked about a lot at this point already. So could you give me a summary of where we are and what your understanding of the issue is at this moment?
Absolutely. So we know that we do what's called a point in time count. So that means year to year, you pick a day and you're counting the level of homelessness on that day. And we've seen homelessness rise 13%. We have about 5,000 people right now who are homeless, primarily in shelter. But our biggest challenge is that we have people who are in these shelters who are working one, sometimes two jobs. But because we are so short on affordable housing, there is not enough transitional housing to start transitioning people out of shelters into more stable housing and eventually, you know, to getting back to their lives. So we really do find a significant challenge. And, you know, I'm sure you've been cold the last 2 weeks. We're getting snow on, you know, Sunday night. I mean, it really is a challenge when it's this cold to make sure there are enough warming centers for people to go into.
What are the issues before the legislature, other than, of course, trying to cut down on that number, that increase? What are some things that you guys are considering? Is it the funding for those warming shelters? Is it programs to help people from ending up homeless if they're not homeless yet, but they're at risk? What are some of the various aspects of this issue that you guys are having to deal with this year?
Absolutely. Well, last year we did see a decrease in $500,000 from the $5 million that's normally put towards these warming shelters. So instead of $5 million, it was $4.5 million. So we certainly are looking for a line item to make sure that we have, you know, we know the winter comes every year, and we need to make sure that we have that consistent funding so that these warming shelters are able to open. But yes, we are absolutely doing everything we can to put funding into programs that will prevent people from dropping into homelessness in the first place. Because honestly, you know, homelessness is the end symptom, right? But there are so many causes underneath. It could be a medical bankruptcy. It could be that you have, you know, some sort of mental instability or perhaps had a substance abuse issue. There are so many reasons that we look at that end up causing homelessness. And right now, the biggest number we're seeing is people over the age of 55 and kids falling into homelessness. So we need to really attack the root causes in order to be able to turn this over. And some of that obviously involves millions of dollars, but some of that is making sure that the programs we're putting it in are efficient and effective, and that we are getting people the help they need before they fall into homelessness.
I'm taking a look at something that just came out from the governor's office recently, that the state is investing $58.6 million in funding from multi-state settlements in the nation's opioid crisis that ultimately is going to go toward housing and recovery support for people who are both facing opioid use disorders as well as homelessness. Now, this is just one particular example that I've pulled that shows that there has been investment in the past, even recently, made toward the homeless issue in Connecticut. But yet, despite these investments, despite resources that are set aside, this is still an issue that we're hearing about, that 13% rise in the last year. How come these aren't enough?
You know, it gets back to that challenge of making sure there's stable housing. We have a housing crisis in Connecticut. You know, some people say it's 90,000 units. Some people say it's over 100,000 units. But we do have a housing crisis in Connecticut. I hear it all the time in my district. I have, you know, families who have adults with disabilities that can't find housing. I have seniors who would really like to get out of the homes that they're in because they don't need that large home anymore. But there are not, you know, places for them to go in their own communities. You know, they don't want to have to move an hour away. They don't want to have to move away from the community they've known and loved. So it's, you know, it is at all demographics that you see these challenges. But if we can't get people into stable housing, then that's why we continue to see people in our shelters. So it's not just putting money towards addiction services, which is great, putting money towards these warming centers, which is also great, but making sure that we are passing the right policies and the right legislation so that we are actively building the kinds of housing we need. And that's all kinds of housing, multifamily, triplexes, duplexes, townhomes, single family homes, market rate, affordable. We need to make sure that we're covering the absolute spectrum of that.
And I want to ask you specifically, and you're the Democratic State Representative, by the way, speaking with Eleni Kavros-DeGraw from Avon, that's your district, but this is an issue that's statewide, correct?
Absolutely. It is a statewide issue. It's actually a nationwide issue. We see these issues all over the country right now. The cost of housing is the number one cost from the majority of people, but obviously that affects other things as well. I mean, you see that right now in Connecticut, 1 in 8 are struggling with food insecurity. It's 1 in 6 kids. You know, your cost of housing affects everything else in your life. And yes, we are seeing it, you know, all over Connecticut, all over the country. And that's what I am hoping we are going to really seek to address this session. We actually have a priority bill in the House, 5002, on housing and homelessness. And that's why our focus is there, because we are listening to the constituents who are telling us how hard it is for them to stay housed. Even the people who are providing these services at many of these organizations, they are nearly homeless themselves.
What are some of the efforts that could go toward making homes and making more affordable living situations for people in the state already, but also people who are maybe looking to come here and they're finding it hard to move?
Absolutely. We have about 73,000 jobs open right now in Connecticut, really good, strong jobs. But you hear stories all the time of, well, I work at Electric Boat, but I had to go to Rhode Island to be able to find housing. So some of the things that we need to work on, transit-oriented development, there's a bill before us this year that will absolutely seek to increase more transit-oriented development where it's appropriate and where the towns want to put it so that we can make sure that people have access to that. We are going to, as I said, I mentioned the multi-family housing, triplexes, duplexes, we're looking at that. And I also want to say cutting red tape for being able to build, and that doesn't mean going against our environmental standards, but it does mean making the process faster, which then in the long run saves money in the cost of building housing. So we have to be thinking about all of those things. We also have to be open to the ideas of prefab. You know, there's a lot of ideas out there. We are just trying to basically distill them into the best possible outcome for the residents of Connecticut.
We have
and
heard
future residents.
Right. We've heard that there have been some towns that maybe they've been trying to fight, you know, building the extra housing, you know, the zoning. Maybe they don't want it. How do you work with those towns to find some kind of solution that works for them?
Sometimes it's listening to the towns to understand what their real objection is, because I find that when you're in these conversations with specific planning and zoning commissions, you can often hear what they're saying, but understand that some of their fears are absolutely unfounded. You know, sometimes you hear, oh, you know, apartments are going to be a drain on a community, when in fact the opposite is true. And I was just at the CBIA conference this week, and they were talking about, you know, the need for more taxpayers. Well, you can't bring in more taxpayers if you don't have a place to house them. I do understand the town's objections. Change is hard for a lot of communities, but there also needs to be, you know, a focus on good planning. What we have right now, sprawl all over Connecticut, that was not good planning. So if we can get back to really good planning principles and make it easier and beautiful for these options to come into communities, I think that people will let go of some of the fear of what these might look like when they are built in their communities, these housing options.
I'm Morgan Cunningham, and you're tuned to Face Connecticut this morning. We are with Democratic State Representative Eleni Kavros-DeGraw of Avon, and we are here talking about the homeless issue in Connecticut and ways to combat it. She's part of the effort at the state capitol to try to figure out just what to do with the problem in this year's legislative session. One thing that we are hearing a lot about, Representative, in this particular legislative session is the budget cycle and the concern that, well, maybe money is going to be tight. Maybe not. We haven't heard the governor's budget address yet. We haven't heard what he's proposing or what he thinks the spending should look like. We'll get a better idea of that in early February. But at this point in time, is that a concern to you?
You know what? I think it's a concern every year. We have to make sure that we are still paying down the debt that we need to pay down. But we also need to ensure that we are taking care of our residents, because that is part of our job. We cannot sacrifice the social safety net just because of the guardrails. I believe that there is a way to do both. I think that that's part of what you're going to hear maybe from the governor, but certainly from the legislature. He presents his budget, then the legislature, you know, gives their ideas, and we try to work together to come up with a budget that benefits everyone. I think that it's important that we have these discussions. You know, we definitely have put a lot on the backs of our nonprofits over the years, and that is, you know, that used to be the work of government, and so we have to appropriately fund our nonprofits to make sure, again, that they are taking care of the people of Connecticut. And I think that we're going to find ways to do that. And the fiscal responsibility does not have to be sacrificed to also take care of our people. I think there are ways to do both, and part of that is making sure that the programs that we do fund are the most efficient and are helping the largest number of people possible.
Earlier in the legislative session, I mean, we were just a few days in, you teamed up with Sarah Fox, the CEO of the Connecticut Coalition to End Homelessness, at a news conference at the State Capitol Complex. What came out of that, and what's your partnership like with Sarah?
You know, Sarah is a wonderful advocate for our homeless community. She often talks about having experienced homelessness herself. You know, they were presenting their agenda. It's a $33.5 million request. And certainly I know people would, you know, kind of gasp at that number. But that is the number that they feel is the right number to get to the most accurate services and to really eliminate homelessness in the state of Connecticut. You know, that is the ultimate goal. So I think that it's been great to have her as a partner in this work. I'm grateful that she is someone who truly has experienced it, so she understands firsthand how hard it is. And that's why it's important for us to also listen to people who are actively living in homelessness right now, which we do on a regular basis via homeless speakers bureaus and other programs. But it also is listening to the advocates who are doing the work and helping us understand better what they really need. And, you know, we had 100 people in that room for that press conference, which is, I think, the most I've ever seen at a press conference here. And it was really important that people who are doing the work feel seen in doing that work.
So it's a new year, 2025, and you're thinking, how am I going to make this year different? How am I going to build something for myself? But where do I start? Shopify is how you're going to make it happen, and here's how. Shopify makes it simple to create your brand, open for business, and get your first sale. The best time to start your new business is right now. Get your store up and running easily with thousands of customizable templates, no coding or design skills required. All you need to do is drag and drop. Their powerful social media tools let you connect all your channels and create shoppable posts and help you sell everywhere people scroll. What happens if you don't act now? Will you regret it? What if someone beats you to the idea? Don't kick yourself when you hear this again in a year because you didn't do anything now. With Shopify, your first sale is closer than you think. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to start selling with Shopify today. Shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Hey, football fans, for those of you who can't get enough Baldy's breakdowns, be sure to subscribe to Brian Baldinger's The Best Football Show. New episodes drop Monday through Friday where Baldy breaks down the best games of the week. Be sure to subscribe to The Best Football Show on the Odyssey app or wherever you find your podcasts.
Because it is so critical to our state.
That $33.5 billion that's being proposed, what are some of the things that that would cover?
It would obviously go towards warming centers. Part of it is making sure that we have enough people that are actually doing the job. I mean, these are not high-paying jobs, and we need people who are qualified social workers doing a lot of this work because we know some of the work is making sure that people are getting substance abuse help. So I think, you know, as you look at the breakdown and it's available, you know, on their website, you'll see that it's a comprehensive package of funding to really address as much of the different multi-layer pieces of this issue as possible.
Would that money be recurring, or is that one time? Is that just for this budget cycle? Would that money be sought again in future cycles?
There is a portion of it that they are looking to have as a line item, as we have said that, you know, winter comes every year. We know it's coming. We know that. I remember last year, I was going to say, actually, I think it was September of 23 that I can remember it was like 46 degrees that night. It was raining. And that's when you end up with hypothermia conditions. So it's like, if that can happen in September, imagine what it's like when we get to the traditional date of November 15th, when most of these warming shelters open. And we've been lucky. We've had a few, you know, warmer winters, but so far, like, we're seeing a pretty cold January that's really can be frightening, especially with these winds. So, yes, some of that, I believe it's around $20 million that would be the stabilizing funds for, like, a long term. And then the rest, I don't believe, are a line item.
I'm Morgan Cunningham. This is Face Connecticut. We're continuing our conversation this morning with Democratic State Representative Eleni Kevros-DeGraw of Avon. We are talking about the homeless issue that is going on in the state of Connecticut, up 13% counted in 2024. So that's definitely something significant and not to be ignored. And so I'm glad that we're having this conversation about some of the ideas being put forward on the issue. I did want to ask, and this is drawing back on something that you had mentioned at the very beginning of our conversation today. You had mentioned that this is an issue now impacting kids and families. What does that look like?
Well, sometimes it looks like couch surfing, where you are with a family member and, you know, that you get to stay there as long as you can. Sometimes it looks like a family living in a car, and that can be really scary because, you know, sometimes they park somewhere that they, you know, eventually, you know, a police officer or a security guard, you know, knocks on the window and says, you can't stay here. So maybe that you're having to move that car in the middle of the night. It's very difficult for these children when they attend school. You know, if they don't have access to a washer or a dryer, imagine being the kid that has to go to school with dirty clothes. We've even seen some of our schools actually have washing machines and dryers now so that these children have a place to take their clothing. I mean, it really has a long-term impact on children. And, you know, of course, if they don't have housing, they're probably struggling with food insecurity as well. They're probably struggling with health care as well. So it really is, you know, when we think about the least among us, there is so much more that we can be doing to make sure that there are better outcomes. But this is a real hardship on these families. And imagine being the parent that is not providing for that child, the stress of that, the worry about their safety. You know, it's an ongoing, painful issue to be a parent who can't provide.
Is there anything that is going on at the schools maybe to help these kids? Or in some instances, I'd imagine this might go unknown to people.
Yeah, it's interesting. Last year, we had a librarian from New Haven who was testifying on a completely different bill, but there was another bill that was talking about homelessness. And she was saying that she knew that the numbers were much higher for kids than maybe we were even able to count, because there's a lot of hidden homelessness. And, you know, they know when they see certain kids over and over again in the library in a way that isn't just, oh, they're excited to come check out books. you know, maybe they're there because that's the only place they can get Wi-Fi. And again, these parents are doing their very best to make sure that these children are still being able to participate in school, to be able to get their work done. But sometimes that's, you know, that's noticed that way. Sometimes, you know, I know it's noticed by teachers at school. I mean, God bless our teachers, often bringing in extra food, extra clothes. I mean, I have friends that teach at schools in some of the cities that have said, you know, put out calls for if you have any clothes in these sizes. You know, we have a family that just went through a fire and now they're homeless. They've lost everything. Or, you know, there's so many different ways that this can happen. And I think that sometimes we turn away from it because of the big fear that we have that it could be us someday. And that's why it's really important we continue to talk about this and that we have compassion for people who are in this situation.
In past conversations, Representative, that I've had on this particular issue, and I'm glad that you mentioned the term, I wasn't about to bring this up otherwise, hidden homelessness, the idea that maybe you know somebody who's dealing with it and you don't know about it, but you know that person. And then if you came to find out about it, maybe you'd be taken by surprise. But what I hear from a lot of advocates is that there isn't shame in this issue, that this is something that should be talked about more. How can we make sure that people are aware that, yes, there's this stigma around homelessness and that it's not all that people think that it is?
I think that it's important for people to be educated on the topic and to understand that, yes, I think sometimes I'll hear, well, it's all, you know, drug addicts. It's not all people who have substance abuse issues. It's not all people who have mental health issues. You know, sometimes it's people who life dealt them a bum hand and they did the best they could. And unfortunately, the way it worked out, it wasn't because, you know, they were lazy or they were, you know, not smart enough. It's just that they got dealt a bum hand and they ended up in homelessness. And I think that that's part of, you know, again, extending compassion, you know, trying to imagine what it would be like to be in someone else's shoes, listening to people, like I said, the homeless speakers bureaus, if you're ever invited to one of those events, it really is awesome to go. And I mean that not in a just like awestruck sort of sense of listening to what it is actually like. I had a police officer in Hartford tell me that, for instance, when a woman is on the street, if she's on the street more than 72 hours, she will be assaulted. Those are the kinds of things that before you judge why that person ended up in that situation, you need to be thinking about just how hard their day is. All day long, you know, the warming centers close in the morning. They're open again at night, trying to find where they can go. You know, if they try to go into a business and the business doesn't want them and they can't warm up, you know, inside a restaurant or warm up inside someplace, just imagine what that is like. I think it's the trying to put yourself in someone else's shoes that we all need to be doing a little bit more before we rush to judgment.
We're in our final few minutes here with Democratic State Representative Eleni Kavros-DeGraw of Avon. I'm Morgan Cunningham. It is Face Connecticut. We're talking this morning about the homeless issue that is going on in Connecticut, and our representative here is part of an effort at the state capitol to try to address it in this year's legislative session as best as possible. Earlier in our conversation, you had mentioned that this is an issue affecting the nation. Now, I'm not necessarily expecting you to be speaking with your colleagues way out in California or counterparts in California, but is this a conversation that you've had with our neighbors in Rhode Island or Massachusetts, maybe New York?
I do my best to talk to any colleague I can find, frankly, anywhere that is looking to be creative in the solutions for this. You know, I had submitted a bill last year that was about tiny shelters on religious property, and we got a lot of positive feedback that that would, you know, work in many instances, not all, but many. We were actually not even putting funding towards it. It would have been the religious community that would be putting their dollars and their mission work towards that. But I also look to Houston. You know, Houston has an unbelievable program where they think housing first, right? Because if you can get somebody stable housing, then everything else can go from there. Stable health care, stable job. You know, that is an interesting idea also. I think it's important to talk to as many states as possible, those in the region and those beyond the region, because, again, trying to find these creative solutions. And I don't believe that they have a Republican or a Democrat, you know, the R or the D after them. We need to find a creative solution that is good for people. And that doesn't matter where that idea comes from to me, as long as we are doing the very best we can to make sure that we are ensuring people's safety and health and wellness through stable housing.
My final question for you, Representative, that we can spend the next moment on. What are the other issues that you're addressing in this year's legislative session? I know this is a big one. It's going to take a lot of time and effort on your part and your colleagues, too. But what are some other things on your radar this year?
Certainly, I know we're looking at some of the voting at now that we have early voting, making sure, you know, we think it went pretty smoothly, but just making sure that that process, I know that that's going to be looked at on GAE. Obviously, on planning and development and on the housing committee, we are looking at housing solutions, so there will be more about that. The public health committee, I just saw yesterday that we're going to be bringing up a bill around pancreatic cancer, which is very personal to me and my family, trying to find better access to screening for pancreatic cancer. I've actually lost 3 members of my family to that, so I think that's an important bill we're going to talk about. I think, you know, that's the interesting thing about the legislature. You have so many committees with so many possible avenues. I think we also, we are really looking at affordability, looking at how we can reduce those utility costs. Is there something we can do there? I had someone who came up to me at the polls with his health insurance bill for his small business and thinking about how can we perhaps have a health plan similar to a public option that businesses, and I hope nonprofits, could purchase into for more buying power, because when you only have a handful of employees, you don't have the buying power that, say, a larger pool of 500 employees might have. So I think these are all really important topics, and I hope that we come to wonderful solutions for our constituents.
If we go back 2 years, I mentioned this at the beginning of our chat today. If we go back 2 years, you and I were sitting down talking about the bear issue that was out of control in Connecticut. How did that work out, and where are we right now? Is that something you expect to be discussed this year?
I actually have heard that the Environment Committee will be discussing the bear situation again this year. I mean, I think that we still have a lot of challenges. I would just remind people that the biggest challenge and the reason that we see them in our communities is that we are feeding them. Inadvertently or not, we are feeding them. I know we have some fines around that now about intentional feeding, but, you know, not keeping your trash out. I know we love the birds, but, you know, not leaving those bird feeders out. Even in weather like this, we've seen bears in Avon in the last couple weeks out and about for a walk. So, you know, they're not denning or, you know, the way that they used to. And so that's really a challenge for us. But I know the Environment Committee, of which I am not a member, I know they will be tackling that again. So we probably will see another bill around bears. And I don't know if they're going to bring up hunting or not hunting, but I'm sure that they will be discussing a lot of possibilities with the bear population in Connecticut.
Representative, I really appreciate your time this morning. Good to talk with you again. Anything else?
Same here. No, I just want to thank you so much for having me. And I do hope that people reach out if they have ideas or thoughts on the work that we're doing, because that's how we always make legislation better, is with public input.
All right. Let's keep in touch. Thank you.
Thank you.
Face Connecticut is a production of the News and Public Affairs Department of WTIC Radio.